Thank you very much. Over the last 2 weeks, I've introduced the congregation to the story of Esther. Today we'll conclude the story, but we'll just go over the first little bit again for those who haven't heard it and to refresh our memories. 3 years after King Xerxes took over the Babylonian Empire, he had a party for all the men in Shusha. After 7 days, he was merry with wine and ordered his wife to come to his party so he could show the men how beautiful she was. Queen Vashti refused because it meant that she would have to take off her head covering and her veil, which she would wear whenever she went near other men other than her husband. So she was banished because she refused. The king was without a wife, a queen, I should say. A beauty contest was held across the empire, from Ethiopia to India. Young women came to the harem and were prepared. There was a 14-year-old orphaned Jewish slave girl who was one of the chosen. Her name was Hadassah, a Jewish name meaning myrtle. Her uncle, Mordecai, who worked as a gatekeeper to the king's palace, had raised her and advised her to change her name to Esther, meaning happiness or star. King Xerxes, after a long, laborious process, which I'm sure he enjoyed, chose Esther and made her his queen. King Xerxes decided, after a few years, working with a committee of advisors was tiring, so he named Haman prime minister. King Xerxes then issued a general order that everyone was to bow to Haman. However, Mordecai constantly refused to prostrate himself before Haman at the palace gate. After Haman found out that Mordecai was a Jew, he designed a plot to have all Jews in the kingdom killed. Haman cunningly obtained the king's unwitting consent for a royal decree that authorized the killing of all of the Jewish people living within the borders of the empire. So Haman sent to all the rulers, governors, and officials, issued in the name of King Xerxes and stamped with his ring, instructions that were to be made public in every province so that everyone would be prepared that on that particular day, 11 months from the proclamation, all Jews, young and old, women and children, were to be killed without mercy, and their belongings were to be taken. When the command was made, the city of Shusha was thrown into confusion. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes in anguish. Then he dressed in sackcloth, covered his head with ashes, and walked through the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. When Esther discovered what Mordecai was doing, she was worried. Mordecai sent her a copy of the proclamation ordering the destruction of the Jews and asked her to go and plead with the king and beg him to have mercy on her people. Esther sent this message to take back to Mordecai. Chapter 4, verse 11. If anyone, man or woman, goes to the inner courtyard and sees the king without being summoned, that person must die. There's only one way. If the king holds out his gold scepter to someone, then that person's life is spared. But it has been a month since the king has sent for me. Mordecai sent back and warned Esther, don't imagine that you are safer than any other Jew just because you're in the palace. Yet who knows? Maybe it was a time like this that you were made queen. Chapter 4, verse 15. Esther sent Mordecai this reply. Go and get all the Jews in Shusha together. Hold a fast and pray for me. Don't eat or drink anything for 3 days and nights. My servant women and I will be doing the same. After that, I will go to the king. Even though it is against the law, if I must die for doing it, I will die. Mordecai did everything Esther had told him to. On the third day, she put on her royal robes and went and stood in the inner courtyard of the palace, facing the throne room. When the king saw Queen Esther standing outside, she won his favour. He held out his gold sceptre. She came up and touched the tip of it. "What is it, Queen Esther?" the king asked. "Tell me what you want and you shall have it, even if it's half my empire." Esther replied, "If it please your majesty, I would like you and Haman to be my guests at a banquet I'm preparing for you." So the king and Haman went to Esther's banquet. Over the wine, the king asked again, "Tell me what you want, and you shall have it." Esther replied, "If your majesty is kind enough to grant my request, I would like you and Haman to be my guests tomorrow at another banquet that I will prepare for you. At that time, I will tell you what I want." When Haman left the banquet, he was happy and in a good mood. But then when he passed Mordecai at the entrance of the palace, when Mordecai did not show any sign of respect as he passed, Haman was furious with him. He invited his friends to his house. He boasted to them how rich he was, how many sons he had, how the king had promoted him to high office, and how Queen Esther gave a banquet for no one but the king and me. And we're invited back tomorrow. But none of this means a thing to me as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the entrance to the palace. So his wife and all his friends suggested, "Why don't you have a gallows built, 75 feet high? Tomorrow morning you can ask the king to have Mordecai hung on it, and then you can go to the banquet happy." Haman thought it was a good idea, so he had the gallows built. That same night, the king could not get to sleep. So he had the official records of the empire brought and read to him. The part they read included the account of how Mordecai had uncovered a plot to assassinate the king. When the king found out that Mordecai had not been honoured or rewarded, the king asked, "Are any of my officials in the palace?" They answered, "Haman is here." And the king said, "Show him in." The king asked Haman, "There is someone I wish very much to honour. What should I do for this man?" Haman thought to himself, "Now who could the king want to honour so much? Me, of course." So he answered the king, "Have royal robes brought for this man, robes that you yourself wear. Have a royal ornament put on your horse. Then have one of your highest noblemen dress the man in these robes and lead him mounted on the horse through the city square. Have the noblemen announce as they go, 'See how the king rewards someone he wishes to honour.'" Then the king ordered Haman to do everything for him that he'd suggested. "You will find him at the entrance of the palace." So Haman did it. Afterwards, Mordecai went back to the palace entrance while Haman hurried home, covering his face with embarrassment. He told his wife and all his friends everything that had happened to him. They told him, "You are beginning to lose power to Mordecai. He is a Jew, and you cannot overcome him. He will certainly defeat you." Then the palace eunuchs arrived in a hurry to take Haman to Esther's banquet. And so the king and Haman went to eat with Esther for a second time. Over the wine, the king asked her again, "Now, Queen Esther, what do you want? Tell me and you shall have it, even if it's half my empire." Queen Esther answered, "If it please your majesty to grant my humble request, my wish is that I may live, and that my people may live. My people and I have been sold for slaughter. If it were nothing more serious than being sold into slavery, I would have kept quiet and not bothered you. But we're about to be destroyed, exterminated." Then King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, "Who dares to do such a thing? Where is this man?" Esther answered, "Our enemy, our persecutor, is this evil man, Haman." Haman faced the king and the queen with terror. The king got up in a fury, left the room, and went outside to the palace gardens to think. Haman could see that the king was determined to punish him for this, so he stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. He had just thrown himself down on Esther's couch to beg for mercy when the king came back into the room from the gardens, Seeing this, the king cried out, "Is this man going to rape the queen right here in front of me, in my own palace?" The king had no sooner said this than the eunuchs had grabbed Haman. Then one of the guards said, "Haman even went so far as to build a gallows at his house so that he could hang Mordecai, who saved your majesty's life. And it's 75 feet tall. Hang Haman on it," the king commanded. So Haman was hanged on the gallows that he built for Mordecai. Then the king's anger cooled down. The same day, King Xerxes gave Queen Esther all the property of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. Esther told the king that Mordecai was related to her, and from then on, Mordecai was allowed to enter the king's presence. The king took off his ring with his seal on it and gave it to Mordecai, putting Mordecai in charge of Haman's property. And then Esther spoke to the king again, throwing herself at his feet and crying. She begged him to do something to stop the evil plot that Haman had made against the Jews. The king held out the golden scepter to her, so she stood up and said, "If it please your majesty, and if you care about me, and if it seems right to you, please issue a proclamation to keep Haman's orders for the destruction of all the Jews in the empire from being carried out. How can I endure if this disaster comes on my people and my own relatives are killed?" King Xerxes then said a proclamation issued in my name and stamped with the royal seal cannot be revoked. You may, however, write to the Jews whatever you like. You may write it in my name and stamp it with the royal seal. And this happened on the 23rd day of the third month. Mordecai sent letters to the Jews and to the governors, administrators, officials of all 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. And they were delivered by riders mounted on fast horses from the royal stables. These letters explained the king would allow the Jews in every city to organize for self-defense. If armed men or any nationality in any province attacked the Jewish men, their children or their women, the Jews could fight back and destroy their attackers. They could slaughter them to the last man and take their possessions. This decree was to take effect throughout the empire on the day set for the slaughter of the Jews, the 13th day of the 12th month. It was to be proclaimed as law and made known to everyone in every province, so that the Jews would be ready to protect themselves from the enemies when that day came. So Mordecai left the palace wearing royal robes of blue and white, a cloak of purple, and a magnificent gold crown. And the streets of Shusha rang with joyful shouts and cheers. For the Jews, there was joy and relief, happiness, and a sense of victory. In every city and province, wherever the king's proclamation was read, the Jews had a joyful holiday with feasting and happiness. In fact, many other people became Jews because they were afraid of them now. The 13th day of the 12th month came, the day on which the royal proclamation was to take effect, the day when the enemies of the Jews were hoping to kill them all. But instead, the Jews triumphed over them. In the Jewish quarter of every city in the empire, the Jews organized to attack anyone who tried to harm them. People everywhere were afraid of them, and no one could stand against them. And this was probably due to the fact that many Jews were trained soldiers in the Babylonian army. In Shusha, the capital city itself, the Jews killed many over 2 days, including the 10 sons of Haman. However, there was no looting. On the next day, there was no more killing, and they made it a joyful day of feasting. And this is why Jews observe the 14th day of the month of Adar as a joyous holiday, a time for feasting and giving gifts of food to one another, called the Festival of Purim. Mordecai, the Jew, was second in rank only to King Xerxes himself. He was honoured and well-liked by his fellow Jews. He worked for the good of his people and for the security of all of their descendants. Queen Esther continued to live in Shusha. Many Jews went back to Jerusalem and rebuilt the temple. And every year since, Jews remember the story of how the exile ended. This year, the Festival of Purim will be held between sunset on the 11th of March and nightfall the 12th of March. Jews will be listening to the Book of Esther in the synagogue, sending food parcels and giving charity. Some dress up, they eat a festival meal of particular dishes, and they sing Psalm 137 and others after the meal. I was extremely impressed when I first heard this story as a young adult, because I realised then, if it wasn't for Queen Esther, then there would not have been a temple for Jesus to do the things he did in. For a while, I want us to examine these characters in depth. Some time ago, Michelle gave me a book which uses these four birds to help people understand themselves and their personalities. As I said in the past, I don't want people to start putting others in boxes. The aim is to start looking at people in the story of Esther and seeing how they act and analyse the story by looking at the characters as having personalities like these four birds. A dove. A dove is a peaceful, placid and sensitive bird. People who are like a dove are gentle, quiet, unobtrusive. They care about others. They're patient and tolerant. They suffer quietly. They're a supportive part of a group of people. They love the company of others. And actually, as I've grown up, I've always seen myself as a dove. And that's what I see myself as. Peacock is a colourful, showy bird. My friend Helen gave me this to show you. And it says... And there's Kath and Kim, if you haven't seen that one before. Those of us who, from time to time, put on the persona of a peacock. Those of us who put on the persona of a peacock from time to time, then we are showy. We can be ambitious. We can be enthusiastic. Peacocks in an organisation are good starters for a project. Sometimes they need a bit of help to finish a project. They're good storytellers and motivators, and I am a peacock quite often. The owl is quiet. A person with owl-like qualities likes thinking away from other people. They like to think and ponder. They like a predictable habitat. Not a risk-taker, cautious and conservative. And I am, from time to time, an owl. Particularly when there's a problem to solve. I solve problems best by myself, not always in a group. The eagle is a powerful bird controlling its domain. It usually gets what it aims for. People with the personality, if you like, traits of an eagle, can get impatient when things don't happen quick enough for them. Prefers freedom to manage themselves and others. They love a challenge, and getting the job done is very satisfying to an eagle. You can imagine my dilemma as a young 20-year-old being sent as a teacher to Lefevre Boys Technical High School with students at least as tall as me, and I had to develop some skills to survive in the classroom. And I actually developed some skills of an eagle. And so now, when you see me choosing to do a job and to get it finished, then I change my personality. I get so focused that I forget to be nice. Leslie calls it being teacher-fied, and it's spot on. I go back into how I had to survive in the classroom in the high schools. There are many people who are really good leaders, focused, able to get the job done, and they can also be supportive and nurturing at the same time. I'm still a work in progress on that one. I mentioned 2 weeks ago about Mother Teresa. I've always seen her as a dove. When I think about it, for this peaceful lady to do what she did, she needed to use the attributes of an owl and an eagle. Good leaders in various circumstances use a variety of attributes. Now we've set the scene, we're going to talk about these principal players in our story. King Xerxes led by authority, and he was a peacock. He was all show. He was concerned with glory and fame. He wanted everybody to be impressed. He decided to show off by bringing his wife to the party. Peacocks don't always think through what might happen. And in politics today, we look around the world, some of our leading politicians are best working in a team. They need people with different outlooks on life to moderate them. In every successful organisation, we need people of all of those attributes, particularly peacocks and eagles. Queen Vashti, to her, taking off her scarf and headgear was unthinkable. She refused. She was a leader to women. She led by example. In a way, she was an eagle, resolute and unwilling to give up her power. Haman was obsessed with power, honour and vengeance. He used trickery with the king in his plan to remove all Jews from the empire. He was an extreme eagle. Mordecai, worshipped God, devoted to his daughter, was a dove, and also we see an owl. He was one of those invisible people who can be ignored but are wise and all-seeing and all-knowing. It would appear he had an idea Esther was meant for greatness. His loyal desire to assist the king with information about the assassination plot was pivotal to the outcome of the whole story. When elevated to take Haman's place, he was humble and fair. It was most likely due to his instructions that although many of the Jews' enemies were killed, there was no looting at all. And now Queen Esther. She lived up to her name. She was a happy person. The king was besotted. She was obedient to her uncle, even though by going to the king, it meant she no longer could marry another. She took the risk and became queen. I see Esther as a dove, humble and knowing her place, wanting to be part of a team. We could say she was a loyal servant leader. When the Jews were threatened, she used wisdom and the power she had to protect her people. And that's the end of the story of Esther. After our next song, The Servant King, we'll look more at ourselves and consider how we may work together as Jesus wants us to.